Welcome to Guerrilla Radio, recorded June 5th, 2024. Well, Britain's political military nexus has been on full display in recent weeks as past and prospective prime ministers assail media, their saber din adding now to the sound and fury of the country's newly called general election kabuki. Former Tory bosses Boris Johnson and David Cameron, along with unelected Prime Minister Rishi Sunak, are now enjoined by Labour leader Sir Keir Starmer in doing their collective utmost to hasten nuclear winter through the fomenting of World War Next with Russia. The former Porcus Amarato and current UK Foreign Secretary Lord Cameron led the charge to Armageddon in early May, opining to the press the appropriateness of Kyiv's use of British weaponry against Russia in any manner it sees fit, saying Ukraine absolutely has the right to strike back at Russia. Alexander Boris DeFeffel Johnson, better known as Bojo, in a private London club speech honoring the heroes of the Azov Brigade, reiterated over the weekend, allowing Ukraine a free hand was the single best investment we can make in the defense of the whole Euro-Atlantic area. Not to be outdone, Labour pretender Sir Keir Monday insisted security will always come first, reassuring the electorate he was ready to push the nuclear button, saying this is a changed Labour Party and the most important thing is I voted in favour of a nuclear deterrent. For its part, the target intended, Russia, warned again, this is a direct escalation of tension around the Ukrainian conflict, which would potentially pose a threat to European security. John Helmer is a journalist and author who spent decades living in and reporting from Russia. He's the principal behind the web news site Dances with Bears and has too been a professor of political science, sociology, and journalism, and served as advisor to government at the highest levels. Among his many book titles are Skripal in Prison, The Man Who Knows Too Much About Russia, The Lie That Shot Down MH17, Sovcom Plot, How Pirates Tried to Capture the Treasure of the Russian Seas and Were Caught Out, and his lately released autobiography, Dunce Upon a Time, A Life of Mistakes. Today, John Helmer and Life During Hybrid War. Well, welcome back to the show, John.
Thank you for having me, Chris.
Well, you know, it's always my pleasure. It's been a while. It seems like years, but it's only been a couple months since we spoke. But the rate of things going on, I spoke just a few weeks ago, and that seems like a year ago, with Canadian international law expert Christopher Black. I know you know Chris. And that was, as it turns out, the very day Rishi Sunak called the UK general election. In Chris's article of a couple weeks before that, Britain at War, the Final Warning, he records Russia's response to their Foreign Secretary David Cameron's reckless remarks, I would say, delivered to the UK ambassador to Russia. And they were saying, quote, the ministry firmly pointed out to Ambassador Casey that Cameron's hostile outburst directly contradicts the British side's earlier assurances during the transfer of long-range cruise missiles to the Kyiv regime that they would under no circumstance be used to strike Russia's territory. Now, there's a lot of things in there I'd like to talk about. But first of all, I haven't heard much discussion at all of this tacit arrangement in the Western press. But are these kinds of arrangements with the West that Putin thought he had, are they worth just the paper that they're not written on, or what?
I think that what's going on here is not confusion and propaganda going in all directions, but rather several different political games being played in different places. And that's very difficult for some so-called US experts like Jeffrey Sachs, for example, to understand what's going on. What's going on the Russian side is that on the first place, there's no news at all that the British are at war with Russia. I mean, we've spoken on this program, we've published books, we've published articles about the way in which the British went to war against Russia in the Skripal so-called Novichok affair back in 2018. So there's no question that there are British staff officers, British technicians, and British generals and admirals hard at work fighting at war with Russia. For Cameron to say the obvious has a different meaning. It's an attempt to mobilize the NATO alliance in the notion that they are not being defeated on the battlefield as they are, and that one new super weapon, meaning the firing of missiles against Russian territory, will give them the kind of victory on the ground or on paper that they think they need to keep up the flow of money and arms. This is a propaganda stunt. It's designed to keep the war machine going in the West, no matter how badly the Zelensky regime is losing on the front and in Kiev and in Lvov. That's one issue. It's also a political stunt on the Tory side, facing a re-election, which they're almost certain to lose with Labour, to position themselves as tougher and more alliance related and linked than Starmer's Labour Party. That's the politics on that side. On the politics on the Russian side, there's a very interesting problem which you don't see in the so-called experts on Russia who broadcast their YouTube commentaries every day. What's happening is essentially this, that there's been a Kremlin foot on the brake, limiting the general staff's options for fighting at the positional level, that's around from village to village on each of the directions or fronts in the Donbas, at the tactical level, which means or sub-strategic level, which means the way in which the general staff is planning to eventually take and force the surrender of Kharkov, Odessa, and other cities to become part of Russia, and at the strategic level, which is to drive all Ukrainian NATO military capability to threaten Russia, including all missiles, west of Kiev, create a demilitarized zone between Kiev and the final front, and eliminate Ukraine as a sovereign power to threaten Russia in the future forever. Those are three things that are going on in Moscow, and there are political debates between the Kremlin, that's President Putin, and the general staff, and the defense ministry, appropriate, what resources should go take priority, and so forth. So what you see is a highly submerged release of Russian thinking about what to do next. So, for example, if you follow, as all the Western commentators do, the Russian military bloggers, who are semi-official, Boris Rozhin's Colonel Kassad, Mikhail Zvinchuk's Rebar, the militarist and others, if you follow what they're saying each day, what you can see is submerged a call for particular types of retaliation. For example, Boris Rozhin, probably the best of these bloggers, wrote the other day, I'm sort of half quoting, that the general staff should be allowed to, quotes, remove any enemy intelligence drones from the Black Sea sky, attack Rzeszów, which is a Polish city and the hub for the transfer of NATO staffs, soldiers and military equipment into the Ukraine, and, for example, he added, American bases in Syria, or take any other position on the escalation ladder. So what Rozhin is saying is, essentially, to answer your question, when Cameron threatens to attack Russian territory with the long-range missiles, or the United States agrees to let, in public, the Ukrainian forces attack deep into Russian territory, and all the other allies click their heels and say, see, Kyle, the Germans, the Danes, the Norwegians, all the other losers on the NATO side do that. What then occurs on the Russian side is, what's the tit for tat? What's the symmetrical or what's the asymmetrical response? And second, when that's aired in, as Rozhin has done it, there's another debate, and that's the debate, it's time for the Russian politicians, particularly the president and the foreign minister, Sergei Lavrov, to stop using words, to stop threatening, just do. Action speaks louder than words. It's a well-known maxim. It's true. So you have a debate going on inside Russia, inside Moscow, inside the military operations commands over what to do next. And that's essentially an argument over get the Kremlin foot off the brake. And that's not something anyone wishes to say too publicly, either in Russia or in the West. In Russia, obvious political reasons. In the West, because they simply don't understand how the command is working in Moscow.
Yeah, well, I'm sure that there's a lot of Russian widows and mothers that have lost sons that wouldn't like the idea that the government has got, I would argue, 2 feet on the brake, 1 foot on the Ukraine brake and another foot on the NATO brake, and that they're not doing the most they can do to bring this to an expedited end, this war that's been going on for more than 2 years now. The Storm Shadow cruise missiles are the ones that are contentious. If it was just a bluff, though, I wonder, they've already supplied those, Britain has, the Storm Shadow cruise missiles, the ones that are really what's worrying the Kremlin, if we're going to believe any of the reports. So what's the nature of the propriety of those Storm Shadows right now? I mean, I don't think they're British or NATO are admitting that they've got their local crews operating these missiles. I can't believe that they would give them to the Ukrainian forces and just walk away and say, okay, but just don't shoot them at the people that have already bombed nuclear power plants. Don't shoot them into Russian territory, okay? But we'll leave these Storm Shadows with you. So how does that work, John?
I have to start off by saying I don't know for sure how it works. I know for sure that the Russian side knows exactly how it works. There have been repeated confirmations of the involvement of British operating crews on land, preparing, targeting missiles again in the Odessa area aimed at Russian Black Sea Fleet targets in the past. And there's no doubt, as you just said, Chris, that the Storm Shadow, or the Scalp as its French parallel is called, are operated by French crews. What exactly they are doing is a military operation secret that's no secret to the Russian side. So when the Russian side uses a high precision supersonic missiles to attack these sites, they kill foreigners, and they kill French, British, American, German, Polish, and other nationalities, both technicians and staff officers, when those targets are taken out. But there's no doubt that that's been happening too, but the casualties on the foreign side are concealed. So if I'm not mistaken, there was some publicity about some high-ranking Polish officers who allegedly suddenly died of heart attacks. They weren't heart attacks. They were Russian attacks and so on. That's the mystery around that's not much of a mystery. What the Russian side should do about it is a waiting game.
Well, now, I mentioned, John, in the introduction, Cameron's not alone in rattling sabers. And over the weekend, Boris Johnson went to an undisclosed private London club and was semi-surreptitiously videoed on a cell phone addressing members, heroes, as he called them, of the Azov battalion. And he was reiterating more strongly the point that that Cameron had diplomatically made, that the gloves should be taken off for the Kiev army when it comes to using everything that's been supplied to them, et cetera, et cetera. Have you seen, firstly, this clip I'm talking about of Boris Johnson?
I'm very grateful to you, Chris, to watch Johnson and these other British has-beens. I'm busy.
So you don't have to.
I'm much too busy to watch has-beens perform semi-surreptitiously in cocktail parties for our neo-Nazis. It's just, I just haven't the time in 24 hours to do that.
Well, this was released. This was released, obviously, to use whatever cachet remains for, I mean, Johnson is, you know, he's still high up there within the Tory circles. He does have influence, even though he's not, he doesn't have an official office. He certainly, you know, his name carries weight and it gets press and so forth. And what do you think then? I mean, when he's reiterating more forcefully this same message that there's no reason why Kiev shouldn't be using these storm shadows to target Russia inside the country, et cetera.
Johnson's words are cheap, but they're always political. Let's remember that Boris Johnson's political career took off at the time of the Skripal so-called Novichok Russian attack, first Russian attack of chemical warfare on British territory. Complete baloney. You can read all about it in the book on the Skripal case. It was a complete pack of lies, but it's been accepted everywhere in the British media and almost entirely by the British public and certainly by the Labour leader, Starmer, who's now running for prime minister. Johnson, as foreign minister, was the first to endorse the notion that Russia had attacked. He used the allegation to boost himself at the expense of then Prime Minister Theresa May, and he replaced Theresa May later in the year. He was the candidate of getting tough on the Russians. That's what he's done. His one-time strategic advisor, Dominic Cummings, has used expletives to describe Johnson's lies, ambition, greed, and political capacities in advancing himself. What Johnson's problem is he's too young to retire on the kinds of riches that former Prime Minister Blair has accumulated. He's looking at the wipeout of the Tories in the July election. So he's positioning himself to come back and replace become the candidate to lead the opposition of a much diminished Tory party in the House of Commons, and therefore put himself in shooting distance, maybe several years away, of regaining the prime ministry. That's what he's doing. He opens his mouth unwisely, but he's opening his mouth politically. He wants to come back. And this is another stunt of that kind. At some point, an intelligent country, and Britain still is intelligent, at least in Cornwall, Wales, Scotland, and a few other parts. And at one point, that country must understand that the war has been lost to Russia. And therefore, what does a country that says it has a special relationship with the United States and a special role in NATO, what role can it play on the losing side in the future? And that's a debate that really hasn't begun in Britain yet. It can't begin because there isn't a single published medium in England, in English, that addresses this issue. Whether you read Private Eye or The New Statesman or The Economist or any of the so-called mainstream papers, the Murdoch papers, The Guardian and what have you, the Financial Times, they're all propaganda mouthpieces for winning the war. So the debate on having lost the war, what's Britain's role, hasn't begun in England yet. Johnson's positioning himself for that debate, and he's positioning himself for some form of stab in the back. We tried to be tough, but we were restricted by our former prime minister or whatever it is. It's a form of stab in the back to keep their political careers going.
Well, I'll have to take your word for what you said about those British publications, because as you don't keep tabs on Mr. Bojo, I don't read their output either. But I wonder, just for Johnson, watching the reemergence, the phoenix-like rise of the bestial Mr. Cameron, or sorry, Lord Cameron, must give him hope. If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Guerrilla Radio. I'm speaking today with John Helmer. He's a journalist and author. He spent decades living in and reporting from Russia, and he is the principal behind the web news site Dances with Bears. He's been a professor of political science, sociologist, and journalism, and served as advisor to governments at the highest. Book titles include Skripal in Prison, The Man Who Knows Too Much About Russia, and his recently released autobiography, Dunce Upon a Time, A Life of Mistakes. Well, now you mentioned Kharkov, John. Just before we went on air, you got a last second breaking news tweet about the situation, about at least part of the situation in Kharkov right now. Do you want to share that?
Yes, quickly. There's breaking news positionally all the time. In other words, along this 1,000-kilometer front, which the Russian forces are gradually moving westward, there's breaking news all the time. Essentially, what's happening is what the GRU, the General Staff Military Intelligence Agency, have described in one of yesterday's newspapers in Moscow as a form of slowdown, while the General Staff of Russia attempts to draw as many of the remaining fighting reserves that the Ukrainian army can mobilize into defending Kharkov, and to destroy those reserves as they move into Kharkov, lock them in the region and destroy them in their place, and weaken each of their positions from which these forces have been drawn along the front, so that the front can move faster south of Kharkov, and Kharkov will eventually surrender. It won't be fought for in the streets. What's left of the population will give up, run away, and they're running away. So what has broken overnight from Poland, from a colleague in Warsaw, is that for the first time we're getting evidence in Poland of a surge of Ukrainian refugees crossing the border from Galician region of the Ukraine, from the Lvov area, into Poland. I can say, because we've said it a lot on your program, Chris, that we've called it the electric war campaign for now, I don't know, 9 months, as it got underway in the autumn of last year. And what its effect has been is not to kill people, not to kill civilians in place, but to drive them westward and out of the country. So there was a major surge of Ukrainian refugees into the Ukraine and then into the rest of Europe at the beginning of the special military operation in 2022, then with the escalation of electric war targeting, the lights go out, the sewage stops, the telephone doesn't work, and so forth. There's no heating. People poured into Poland. Because we were reporting, I think the only Western outlet for reports from the Polish Border Guard, which was reporting movement across the border into Ukraine from Poland, from Ukraine into Poland, the Polish Border Guard was giving us an index of how serious and large, or how stable, or how changing those population flows were. And that gave us a measure of how effective the electric war campaign was on the Russian side, deep into Western Ukraine between Kiev and Lvov. Because we did that, Sikorski, the foreign minister of Poland, who's long watched our material and tried to attack us through his wife, Anne Applebaum, Sikorski ordered the Polish Border Guard to stop publishing their daily reports of the numbers moving between the Ukraine and Poland. So those border reports in tweet form from the Polish Border Guard stopped about 8 weeks ago. We noted that at the time. Today, what we learned, and therefore what I've put up and what you've just referred to, is a report from Polish train sources that Polish train personnel, conductors and so forth, have been warned to and are seeing a surge of Ukrainians moving westward into Poland, a surge, a real lift in the numbers, which will have politically negative effect in Poland, which is getting tired of paying for the Ukrainian results of the war.
Well, John, let's take a break right here. I'm going to do a station ID, and then we'll come back in a minute and talk a little bit more about this and move on to some other topics, because there's a lot that we got to cover. And as usual, we're not getting anywhere close. Again, you're listening to Guerrilla Radio. I'm speaking with John Helmer. Stay tuned. We'll be back in 1 minute.
Moscow, Tokyo, New York. Guerrilla Radio is everywhere at guerrilla-radio.com. Everywhere, all the time.
International waters off the sands of the Mediterranean shore. They were executing prisoners by a mosque in the Sinai. And that day, scores of Egyptian soldiers' bodies there would lie. The IDF was trying to cover up their war crimes, and the USS Liberty saw it all in real time. So the Israeli Air Force got the orders, bombs away, when Israel attacked the USA. With the crew. After all that, the ship's still afloat. Came the IDF's torpedo boats. All the survivors remember the day when Israel attacked the USA.
So welcome back to Guerrilla Radio. Again, I'm here with John Helmer. John Helmer is the chief honcho over there at Dances with Bears. You can find it online. We were talking before the break, John, about the situation, the fallout of the electric war that you and I have spoken or talked about over the year, or last couple of years, quite a number of times, actually. Ivan Kachanowski, the Canadian professor, he's done a lot. He did a lot of work on the Maidan, what really happened at Maidan when the coup happened back in 2014, more than anybody else, I think. He writes about this this blackout currently going on, dark future of Ukraine. He quotes someone as saying, an official says, he put it bluntly, we should prepare for life in the cold and the dark. And this is springtime right now. I can't imagine what's going to happen in half a year. It surprises me, John, though, that I've been, Kachanowski's been running videos on his Twitter page of these snatch and grabs, these press gangs in the streets, yeah, mostly in Kiev. It's been denied, of course, that it's happening. But now the last ones I've been seeing, a lot of the passersby or witnesses are getting involved and trying to intercede and trying to help the victims of these snatches to get away. And it looks like the worst job, second worst job to have in the Ukraine right now is being one of these snatchers. But another thing they say, though, is, John, that there's loads of fighting age guys in Poland and in other European capitals. And I read recently that there was, like just within a couple of days, there was a new restriction on people that had dual citizenship, that it wouldn't be honored, that they wouldn't be able to travel and get out of Ukraine if they were already in Ukraine. And I'm not sure what it means for those that are outside of Ukraine that have those kinds of passports, or others that maybe might have gone back to Ukraine thinking they wouldn't get trapped. So it's funny to see that this big wave of people are being allowed out of Ukraine.
Well, they're allowed if they're women and children. They're not allowed if they're men, and certainly not if they're men of fighting age, unless they have papers to indicate a disability, a significant disability. So the most